Ollie, Esquivel, and Ella May made their way directly to the armory, where Bud was still handing out inventory. The old man saw the look on his son's face, and he stood to one side. Ollie gave him a half-smile. Ollie took over the blaster room and handed out SMGs and rifles to the assembled SEC force. A quarter of the Ville's SEC force was clustered in the hallway, receiving new blasters and ammo, while Ollie checked off the list with ease. Esquivel looked around for JB.
Where's JB, S? I thought he'd be here by now.
I don't know, babe. If Ollie's doing the blasters, then our man's gonna be handling the grins, right?
Guess so. You gonna go on this raid with him?
Yeah, I'll go with him. When was the last time I did anything other than fight in Ice Pick's bar?
Can I come along, too?
What do you mean, babe? You're a mechanic. By rights, you should be going over the wags we'll be using, not hanging around here. When was the last time you had combat experience?
Oh, it's not that simple, S. I have to come along. I might not see JB again. There was something about him that changed when his memory came back. And that's good for him, but not for me. His place is with them, and he may not come back here after the firefight, and I don't know. I just want to see him go.
Even if it means you might buy the farm yourself? Shit, you got it bad, girl.
Esquivel looked up the staircase as a procession of SEC men filed down. Had to be nearly half the SEC force moving through the armory building, getting ordnance for the attack.
Listen, we'll get ourselves equipped, go see JB and see what he says. If he says no, I'll deck you myself if I have to.
Ella May and Esquivel fought their way up the stairs, past the stream of SEC men coming down, and around toward the Gren and Plasek's room. JB was so engrossed in his task of equipping the SEC men that he didn't even notice the two enter the room.
Dude, we need to talk to you.
Not now, I got work to do.
We want to come with you.
We?
Yeah, both of us. Me? It's my job, dude. I'm still supposed to be your bodyguard, and I'm a SEC man, right? But Ella May wants in, too. I've tried to tell her no, but she won't listen to me.
Dark Knight, I can't talk about this now. Wait over there and let me finish what I'm supposed to do.
Esquivel led Ella May into a corner of the room. When JB was finished, he joined them.
You can't come, Ella May. You don't have the combat experience.
Bullshit! How do you know that?
You're an ace mechanic. No Baron is going to put someone with those skills in the front line.
What does that have to do with it?
Everything. You go into battle not knowing what you're doing, and you're a danger to everyone you fight with. Look, I know why you want to come. I understand. If we get Ryan and the others out of there in one piece while we chill the scum who are holding them, then we're coming back here. They'll need some R&R, and Xander will treat them like legends. That suits everyone. So if it's not my turn to buy the farm, I'll be back and we can talk then.
If you're sure.
Sure. You don't have a choice, lady.
JB caught Ella May with a left hook on the jaw and laid her out. Esquivel looked at him in amazement.
What? You think I had time for arguing?
Hey, none of my business, dude. I just know how pissed she's gonna be when she wakes up.
I'll worry about that later.
JB racked the M4000, checked the Uzi, and sheathed his Tecna.
Come on, S. Time to get your shit together if we're gonna do this.
The SEC man moved rapidly, taking grins from storage and attaching them to the clips on his uniform. He still had the regulation issue AK-47 slung on his shoulder.
You need to lose that. And we'll get Bud and Liza to look after Ella May.
Without a backward glance, JB left the grenade room, heading for the blaster store on the ground floor. Esquivel hustled to catch up. Ollie was fitting out the last of the SEC men, and the armory was almost deserted. The majority of the men, now fully equipped, had made their way to the WAG Park, where their transport to the Ville of Nagasaki would be waiting.
Yo, Ollie, fit me out!
Esquivel handed over his AK-47. The young man gave him an H&K MP5 and an M60 with a bipod attachment.
What about you, JB?
I'm set. You say goodbye to your old man?
In our own way, yeah.
One more thing. We left Ella May upstairs taking a surprise nap. Get Liza to look out for her when she comes to.
Ollie disappeared into the rear of the armory and was back within a couple of minutes.
Done. Let's do it.
When they hit the WAG Park, where the war party was massing, ready to depart, the scale of the action hit them. The WAG Park had been cleared. The convoy led by Malloy now relocated to the park on the far side of the blacktop. The blood and debris had been haphazardly swept aside. The vehicles used as cover moved out and replaced by a series of armored wags painted a uniform dull brown color to blend with the land when in transit. There were 8 of these wags, each capable of taking up to 10 men. Esquivel estimated they were short of transport for 20 men, as around 100 soldiers had been equipped.
They're either going to leave some of us behind, or it's going to be a tight squeeze in there. And I'll tell you guys, I don't reckon that'll be good for fighting forces, to arrive cramped up and stiff, unable to move.
Maybe we ought to mention it.
You think Hammock's going to listen to you?
As for what I saw, I'd be surprised if Hammock's in charge anymore.
Then who the hell is going to lead the charge?
Good question, kid.
The three men stood in the center of the park, waiting for something to happen. It looked as though the war party wouldn't even get out of the park, let alone reach Nagasaki. The rogue wag had been gone for some time and had a good start on them. Although this didn't matter to Xander and his sec force, it did to JB. He knew that every minute wasted put his friends at greater risk.
Fuck this. We gotta make something happen. Let's go.
JB and Ollie deftly mounted the roof of one of the war wags. Ollie fired his Weatherbee into the air. The report of the rifle cut through the milling confusion of the sec force, drawing their attention to the two men standing on the wag.
Is there anyone in charge here? And there needs to be. Me and Ollie will do it if you'll have us. Esquivel will work with us. We need to get some strategy together for the attack.
What about Hammock? He's the boss.
Yeah, what about him? He's not here, is he? We need to move.
Xander entered the compound on his own. The Baron cut through the crowd and mounted the wag until he stood next to them.
Hammock has been relieved of his post. There'll be a new sec chief appointed when you return triumphant from this mission. In the meantime, I'm going to brief you. And then you will be led by these two, as they so rightly suggested. Hear me. Hammock was responsible for the fuck-up earlier. No way he's sacrificing more of you for his stupid ideas. Instead, I want you to travel to that pesthole-ville and use the wags to encircle it. You hit at the same time, circling them to stop the running and blast them to dust. Wag drivers, listen up!
Xander gave the vehicle drivers their intended positions and the attack time, having them synchronize their wrist crons. The order of attack for the individual sec teams in each wag was detailed, with the drivers holding responsibility for passing orders to their crews. Within half an hour, as the sun was creeping up over the horizon, they were ready to depart. With a last word of farewell for his men, Xander left them to file into the wags with JB, Ollie, and Esquivel in the lead wag. The convoy filed out of the wag park, headed toward the wastelands in search of the ville. There was nothing that the companions could do except wait for Buckley's next move. The tallow lamps, sputtering as they were dismounted and moved by Ryan and Jack, cast a dim light that reflected nothing but a mounting sense of despair. Before, Ryan had only seen the dimly illuminated central area of the barn. That had been bad enough, showing little but filth, rotting meat, and the results of Nagasaki torture methods. Taking up the tallow lamps, Ryan and Jack ventured into the dark. Beyond the area in the center, the stench of decay and death got worse. The floors were stained with years of blood and gore. The residents of Nagasaki took their pleasures seriously. But that wasn't the worst of it. This was a place of no escape. The walls inside as well as out were reinforced.
If there is only one method of entry, then it should, in theory, be as easy for us to keep them out as it is for them to keep us in.
What good is that? No food, no water. Why we want to stay?
Survival instinct, perhaps. A little longer before we are chilled, a little longer to savor the sweetness of life.
Not so sweet in here, you old fool. You mean a little longer to contemplate our fate?
Perhaps. But a little more time bought means a little longer for something to happen. It strikes me that human nature does not, in essence, change, no matter what happens to it over the years. You dared to impinge on the universe of the Baron of... Where was it again? Ah, yes, Duma. Well, to return to my point, if you impose on him, would he not wish to impose on you in return?
You really think he'll bother to raid this pest hole? Why wouldn't he have done it before?
because he had no need. These people are inbred cretins, incapable of causing his vill any serious damage. But with us, they have struck at his home. It strikes me that any baron would not like that in the slightest. So, what would he do? Why, he would mount an attack of his own to eradicate the menace.
Are you suggesting we sit it out here in the hope that your speculation comes true? We can't afford to do that. It'd be a slow chilling. Me, I'd rather go quickly.
Not much of a choice, is it? We hang on and hope for a miracle, keeping them out but ourselves prisoner, or what? How can we put up any kind of a fight without weapons? They outnumber us so heavily that we need something to even up the odds.
Yeah, and we got it. We're smarter than them. We must be able to think of something.
Yeah, maybe could do it.
Daylight had spread by the time the lead wagon the war party drew to a halt. The other wags pulled up behind and the drivers dismounted, meeting in the middle of the small circle formed by the stationary vehicles. JB, Ollie, and Esquivel joined them.
Why have we stopped?
The driver of the lead wag pointed off to the northeast.
The shithole they call home is about a half hour's drive away, just out of sight. It's recessed in a small valley. We won't see it until we're on it. But their set can see us coming from a few miles away. So we all figured this is where we'd stop and get our tactics right.
Have you been told which wags take which position, or do you have to sort that now?
Xander gave us the tactics and told us who went where, but I figure as long as we keep to the battle plan and know what we're doing, a little adjusting ain't a bad thing.
So how well do any of you guys know this place? You been around these parts before?
To tell you the truth, S, we all keep well clear of the sick fucks down there.
What about basic layout, distances? Any weak spots or strong points?
One of the other drivers nodded. He was lean and rangy, and his tanned arms were cut with white scar tissue. He looked and sounded like a long-serving sec man.
Well, I seen that place fairly close once. Valley forms a circle about 2 miles round. Most of the buildings are clustered in the center. But they got one big one that's set apart. Might be the armory, might be where the baron lives. It looks more like a jail, though, with a trench all the way around. That could be a fucker to crack. Otherwise, they ain't got much guard. Because they ain't got much to guard, if you know what I mean. Only the one road in, more like a dirt track. No sec post there. No track round the back or side. Just rough terrain, but no hidden posts.
That we know about. Okay, listen up. I know how to blast the fuck out of things like that barn, so I want to take that back end of the ville. Me and Ollie will ride the wag that does that. Any problems?
The drivers looked at one another.
That's fine by us. We'll move out from here into a pinwheel that circles the hellhole. Attack starts when our crowns make 12:15. That gives everyone enough time to get into position. Okay, let's do it.
One more thing. You know we're supposed to haul out the people that I travel with. The one-eyed man, the red-haired woman, the black woman, the old guy, and the albino.
Look, man, that might be what you want, but it ain't our problem. Xander didn't say shit about that. Now, he just wants the whole dung heap wiped out. Now, you want to save him, you got to go there and get him before us, because we don't have time to stop and ask questions.
With that, the drivers returned to their wags, leaving J.B., Ollie, and Esquivel standing alone in the center of the circle.
That cold-heart bastard makes noises about all the stories he's heard about us and how he wants to save Ryan, then he doesn't tell these fuckers. What kind of a lying, two-faced fuck is he?
He's kept a tight rein on Duma for a long time, dude. I told you there was something corrupt about the vill, didn't I? Never trust that bastard. The only thing we can do is make sure that we get to your people before any of the others. Think about it. They're all gonna have their hands full with the inbreeds. They're not actually looking for your friends, but we will be.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Best thing we can do is get the attack going and blast our way through the back of the ville, see what we can find.
It took the companions some time to gather together items that they could use to defend themselves and secure the barn as a fortress. They tried to work loose the old blades that were stuck into the wooden stanchions and wallboards. They were deeply embedded, but Ryan and Mildred, who had set to this task, found that once they had managed to pry one loose, they could use the point to gouge the wood around the next. Doc and Christy rummaged among the detritus on the floor of the barn, searching for any old bowls or receptacles they could use to gather the torrent ashes that were around the floor. Using the flame from the tallow lamps on a small sample of the material as they scraped it into the bowls, they could see that it was highly flammable, burning brightly with a blue-tinged flame, sending up a cloud of noxious smoke.
I dare say that's effective.
They extinguished it quickly. Jack spent his time moving around the barn in the dark, picking at the nails that extruded from the wood. He gathered a selection of them that he carried into the center of the barn. The nails were bent and rusty, but the ends were still sharp. With diligence and patience, Jack worked at both the nails and the branding irons, using each to hone the point of the other until they had a degree of sharpness to them. They worked as fast as they could. When they were ready, the bowls were placed on the floor on either side of the door, with fuses made from lengths of hemp rope found on the floors and tied to stanchions. Each companion had a blade or a sharpened branding iron, with clusters of nails hidden about their person.
They're putting the bridge in place.
Ryan moved behind a stanchion on the left, with Doc just to his rear, hidden behind a hastily constructed bale of hay. Across the barn, Christy and Mildred were also using stanchions and hay for shelter. Doc and Mildred each had one end of a fuse and a tallow lamp. Somewhere above them, Jack was perched on a cross piece of the beamwork, waiting to pounce on the enemy.
Now!
As the door swung open, Ryan could see Buckley and his two personal sect men standing on the threshold, with a group of Vildwellers behind them. They were almost comically puzzled by the sudden smell and light of the burning fuses.
Get back! Get back!
Buckley turned and pushed his people back, trying to fight through them and away from the imminent explosions.
Somebody shut the door!
The bowls of tar and ash ignited in a flash of brilliant light, immediately replaced by plumes of thick, choking black smoke.
They're closing the doors!
The thick, oily smoke began to clog the companions' lungs. The companions had to do something quickly before the Nagasaki dwellers managed to shut the doors completely.
Jack! Doc! Everybody over here now!
Ryan gestured to the doors and the companions rushed them, pulling against the people on the other side.
Pull!
The people on the other side of the double doors were taken by surprise and lost their grip. The companions wrenched them open, the movement bringing a sudden rush of air into the barn.
Now!
Yeah! Etoile!
Some of the Nagasaki dwellers were still on the bridge. Others had retreated to the far side. Few were ready to face the onslaught to come. Ryan was in the vanguard, with Jack at his side. Both men were carrying sharpened branding irons. Ryan drove the point of his branding iron through the eye of one of Buckley's personal guards. Screwing the iron as he drove it in, Ryan reversed the screw and pulled. He raised a foot and kicked the man backward. The man went off the bridge into the dry moat below. Ryan's attention was immediately taken up in fighting two more inbreds. To his side, Jack was a blur, the branding iron whirling in a circle as the sharpened and blunt ends wreaked havoc among the Vill dwellers. Doc, Christy, and Mildred joined Ryan and Jack as they waded into the crowd on the bridge, using their blades to hack and slash at anyone near. Ryan knew the stolen wag had to be somewhere in the Vill. If they could get to it, they might be able to get out of Nagasaki. He was aware that some of the people on the bridge weren't directly attacking him or the other companions. They were slipping by so that they could approach from the rear.
Look out! Behind us!
The companions were now surrounded on all sides, and fighting became harder as they were given less room in which to wield their weapons.
By the three Kennedys!